It's Hypnotized with Bill and Nikki, live from coast to coast. Just sit back for a spell, put your conscious mind on cruise, and let your unconscious come out to play.
All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, this is Bill Gladwell, and you're listening to Hypnotized with Bill and Nikki. I'm sitting here with Nikki on my left.
Hi.
And we have a special guest with us today. His name is Jeff Richards, and he's the president of SAH, which we talked about last week, which is the Society of Applied Hypnosis. Jeff, are you there?
I am here, Bill.
Oh, that's...
Hi, Nikki. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Jeff.
How are you doing?
I am fantastic. Walking tall, looking good, mentally alert at all times. By God, I'm officer material.
if the listeners remember the call or remember the show from last week, we actually went through a basic frequently asked questions of what hypnosis really is, and the Society of Applied Hypnosis actually sponsored the program last week, and they're sponsoring the program this week. And we answered a lot of questions in regards to what hypnosis is, what it isn't, some of the most frequently asked questions that we get when we do see clients for the first time. And I also explained that there were several hypnosis organizations in existence in the United States.
Hold on. I wanted to make you wait just a second. I told y'all, your voices are so light compared to Jeff's that trying to equalize them is killing me.
Okay.
Jeff, you need to just talk much lighter, and Bill and Nikki louder, and we'll be good. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And we spoke about some of the hypnosis organizations that are here in the United States, and also the hypnosis organizations that are overseas. And each of the hypnosis organizations has their strong points, and then they have their weak points. But the thing I like most about the SAH is what the quality of hypnotists that they send out of their trainings. And so for the next 55 minutes to an hour, we're going to talk to Jeff and get his insights on how the Society of Applied Hypnosis began, how it got started, how he became president, and maybe take some phone calls that either Nikki or I or Jeff can answer in regards to hypnosis. So, Jeff, what can you tell us about yourself? How did you get started, and how did you get up to this point?
Well, I got started in hypnosis because I got a bad job evaluation, Bill. I got a bad job evaluation about 9 years ago or so, and I was told I had to take a class basically in how not to be a jerk. It later turned out this was, it turned out this was a technique that my manager was using with all of his employees to exert some control, but I didn't know that at the time. And I started seeking out what I could find in terms of how not to be a jerk classes. Search engines kind of failed me there. But yeah. I found NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, as most of the listeners are aware, is a powerful change work technology. And I took a little 3-day class in that. And I met some hypnotists while I was there. They were taking the class. And I became very interested in what they were doing and started looking into how one becomes a hypnotist. Wound up taking a class. The society had not yet been founded yet at that point. Wound up taking a class that was certifying through their own certification organization, which I don't know if you touched on that last week, but that's not really that uncommon. That's how a lot of organizations get founded, is so that if you have a school, you can certify them. And I wasn't real happy with what I was able to do when I got out of there. But I kept plugging away and wound up taking a couple of different classes. Took a class with a man by the name of Mark Cunningham, probably best known to your listeners as Major Mark Cunningham. And through there, I got to meet Mark, and I got to meet someone who at the time was an associate of his, a man named John Petroselli. And they had founded the society together, which led to the first generation of SAH certification classes, which is a class that's still being taught, although it's no longer a SAH certification class, Mark Cunningham's new curriculum.
Right. All right. Just as a reminder for our listeners also, you can call in, and the toll-free number in the U.S. to call in is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. You can also log into our website at bill-nikki.com and drop us an email or text message. And you can go to BBS Radio and have some chat programs on there that you can actually talk to us while we're on the air. So, Jeff, you came, you kind of explained how the SAH came into being. How did you become involved with the SAH, and how did you become president? How did that work out for you?
Well, I'd like to give you just a little bit more background about how the SAH came into being, because it's pretty important, and it's part of what sets us apart from some of the other organizations. I mentioned John Petroselli before. John was originally a Silva Method instructor.
Can you explain that a little bit, the Silva Method?
Sure. Sure.
I'm
Silva Method.
I'm going to during this call so you can explain some things.
Quite all right. Silva Method was a change work modality. It's still in existence, although it's a little different from what I understand. I have not been through the training personally. But from what I understand, when the founder, Jose Silva, passed away, there were some changes made, and the training went in a couple of different directions, so it's not the same as it was back when John was originally trained up. But John had been running practice groups in Silva in New York City, and like a lot of people who live in New York, who have friends in New York or business in New York, 9/11 was a huge watershed moment for John. John was actually walking down the street to his office, which was very near the World Trade Center, and was caught in the falling debris when Tower 1 came down.
Wow.
And he remembers walking down the street, and the next thing he knows, he was waking up in the lobby of a building covered in ash and debris. He has no idea how he got there. He assumes that someone found him collapsed on the street, either overcome through lack of oxygen or actually trapped in some rubble and dragged him in there for safety. He has no idea exactly what happened there. But he began looking into something that would be a little bit more specifically directed towards change work, towards helping people overcome limits, past traumas, than Silva was specifically. And he came upon hypnosis and essentially taught himself hypnosis through old books, old videos. There wasn't a whole lot in the way of modern hypnosis, at least not in terms of modern hypnosis training products at the time. And while he was going through these things, he came across a video that he'd purchased on eBay some years before, and I don't know if anybody listening has this problem. You get a whole lot of stuff to listen to and watch, and you develop a significant back catalog that you haven't gone through. John put some stuff on.
So many things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of frightening the amount of stuff that I've got here. But John was packing up some stuff. He was moving, and he happened to have a Ross Jeffries video on in the background. Ross.
Now, explain who Ross Jeffries is for those listeners
sure.
that don't know of him.
Sure. Ross Jeffries is a person who uses neuro-linguistic programming techniques to help guys, this is sort of a family show, let's say, help guys meet women.
That's a good way to pick it. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's right.
And there for a while.
I mean, he does that, but at the same time, he is he's an excellent NLP trainer.
He really is. And a lot of for people who have only read books in NLP or maybe have listened to audio programs in NLP, and there are some good ones, it's tough to figure out exactly how to apply some of these things. And even if you have no interest in picking up women or no interest in learning Ross's techniques and learning how to pick up women, it's interesting to hear how he uses NLP in that way. And I was able to figure out a lot of stuff about NLP just by listening to how Ross did it. But some years ago, Ross, I'm sorry?
I also went through his program just because I had heard he was an excellent NLP trainer. And what he does is teach you how to take NLP. And in some other classes, you learn NLP, but they don't teach you how to apply it. He teaches men and women also how to apply it to a specific thing. And then it kind of generalizes through the rest of your life, and you can begin to apply it to other areas.
Well, that's very true. Because once you learn how to use a particular technique, it doesn't really matter what your goal is at that point. As long as you know how to use it, you can just apply it to the new goal.
That's right.
If that makes sense.
Oh, that's correct. That makes perfect sense.
So Ross was working with a fellow a while back. Did a couple of videos with him, a man named him of Major Mark. And John was listening to this video in the background, and he heard Major Mark come on, and it's like a little light bulb went on over the top of his head. It said, "This is the guy who's talking about hypnosis the same way I think about hypnosis." Mark was younger than most of the people who were talking about hypnosis at the time. He was a little bit more in your face than most of the people who are doing hypnosis to this day, with the possible exception of John himself. And John really thought that he'd found something that resonated with him. So he invited Mark to participate in some practice groups that he'd put together for hypnosis. And from his experiences with 9/11 and from working with people who'd had some issues because of 9/11, he founded an organization called Sleepwalkers International. At the time, it was called Somnambulistic Sleepwalkers. The name has since changed. And Sleepwalkers was is a hypnosis practice group. And there's chapters now all over the world, not just New York and L.A. and the big cities, but chapters here in Columbus, where I am, where you are, and also a couple in Texas. I think there's one in Michigan. They just redid the website, and there's chapters in places that even John didn't know there were chapters.
I think that the Sleepwalkers is an excellent group because I see people coming out of the Sleepwalkers groups that have more knowledge just by going to the groups, the Sleepwalker groups, than people who come out of some other organization's trainings, because the practice part of hypnosis, where you're actually in front of a person and putting them to trance, they don't go over it a whole lot in some other organizations. It's a weekend seminar. You sit there and listen to a lecture, or worse yet, I know some organizations that have their training strictly online, and you never do work with a real person. So I think the Sleepwalkers, it's an excellent group also.
Oh, exactly. And one of the things that running the original Sleepwalkers meetings forced John to do, because your typical Sleepwalkers meeting is just 2 hours, was to both come up with techniques or discover techniques that other people had created that could be taught and, this is the important part, like you said, practiced and learned in that two-hour window. And that's where John came across what is the backbone of Sleepwalkers. It's the backbone of the Society of Applied Hypnosis, too, the Elman Induction.
Right.
And I suspect, although I would hope not, I suspect that there are probably some listeners who are not familiar, or at least who are not familiar with doing the Elman Induction. And just very briefly,
we're working with a few hypnotherapists now that have gone through trainings from other organizations. And I should tell people, and I reminded people last week on the program, that I am a trainer for the Society of Applied Hypnosis. So I'm acting dumb on the call so Jeff can talk, but I really do know what I'm talking about. And we are working with a couple hypnotherapists, and I've worked with people in the past who have gone through other organizations' trainings. And they have no idea 50% of what the Society of Applied Hypnosis, what they teach. And the Elman Induction is one of those things that people just don't learn.
Oh, I know. It's rather strange. I went through another organization's training, that first training I was speaking of earlier. We had to buy quite a few books for that class. One of the books we had to buy was the people who are familiar with it tend to refer to it as the Green Book, which is Elman's hypnotherapy book. And even though we had to buy it, we didn't actually learn the Elman induction in that training.
Well,
I'm not entirely sure what the purpose of that was, except to sell books, to be honest with you.
Well, this is a good place to remind people that are listening, they can call in the U.S. at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. They can go to bbsradio.com and log in there and find out more about the show and chat. Also, bill-nicky.com. It's bill-nicky.com, and you can link right on over to our show. So, you went through some trainings, Jeff, and you became involved with the SAH. Jeff and I have known each other for, what, probably 4 years now, 5 years maybe?
About that, yeah. We actually met at a training that Mark Cunningham was putting on.
And believe it or not, Mark Cunningham, you hear all these big names, and Mark is actually from Sylvania up near Toledo, Ohio. And when you get, especially in the hypnosis community, some of the bigger names live in some of the craziest places and weirdest towns, but it's because you can go anywhere and you don't have equipment to drag around with you, and it's everything is in your head, and it's your knowledge that you can teach people. And that's what the Society of Applied Hypnosis, that's their forte, is knowledge and application. So we met up at one of Mark's events. And so, Jeff, you're getting closer to the SAH, but how you became involved in it, so I'll let you finish that, and then we'll go into some more questions.
All right. Well, at that same event where I met you, Bill, it was the first time that I met John. It was the first time that I met Mark. And about a year, a little over a year later, I ran into John again at another training that Mark was doing. This time it was a performance hypnosis class in Bangkok, Thailand. And it was just after that event when Mark and John decided to go their separate ways. And John was left trying to decide, do I run the SAH myself? Do I throw in the towel and call it a day? Or do I try to find somebody else to run it? And John and I had struck up a friendship while we were there, and we were staying in touch. And apparently he liked some of the things I was saying and some of the ideas that I had, because about a month after we came back from Thailand, I got a phone call from him. I remember it very clearly. I was driving down the highway, and my cell phone rings. And just so everybody knows, I drive safe. I have a headset. And I pushed the little button on the headset. It was John. And John said, hey, how you doing? Good to see that you're doing okay. You want to run the Society of Applied Hypnosis? Was not a phone call I expected to get. But I was very pleased and honored to be selected. It's something that I do take seriously. And, you know, like you've said, Bill, it's a different kind of hypnosis organization. It's much more about training up good hypnotists than it is about generating income for the organization.
Right.
I mean, as president, I don't take a salary. You know, I reimburse myself for expenses, but that's it. John doesn't take a salary. We've got legal counsel we're very, very fortunate. He happens to also be a hypnotist, and he does a lot of his work for free or a very, very reduced rate. And, you know, it's all about training up really good hypnotists and raising awareness of the hypnosis profession as a profession, not just some wacky little hobby.
I run into so many hypnotists that have been certified and hypnotists that are practicing that it's kind of scary that they're practicing. And we talked about this on the show last week that, you know, anybody can go to the library and hang up a shingle, and you might as well do that with some of the trainings that some of the other organizations have, because they learn how to put a person into trance, but then they don't know what to do with them after they're into trance. And sometimes they learn one specific technique on how to put a person into a trance. And not everybody's hypnotized the same. One of the main aspects of being a very, very good hypnotist is being flexible and being able to adapt to the person sitting in front of you. And I run into that all the time, and I get referrals from other people. I've gotten referrals from psychiatrists and social workers and even other hypnotists. And it scares me at some of the stories that I hear when they come to me of what went on. And when I learned about the Society of Applied Hypnosis and it was being started and what the principles were that it was based on, it really impressed me. But more than that, I think it's very important that the hypnotherapists and hypnotists that are out there have a good name and build up a good reputation for everybody else.
Oh, you're absolutely right. One of the things that I try to run my own practice, I'm also a practicing hypnotist, and the society by, is a rising tide lifts all boats. If one hypnotherapist or one hypnotist in town is doing really well, that encourages everybody else to do better, both in terms of their own skill and their own business acumen, because this is a business. A lot of people forget that.
Right. And I do run into people. Like I said, we train hypnotists even in the area where we are at. And people ask me, aren't you afraid of, creating your own competition? And no, I'm not afraid of that. I've been doing it for a very long time. And I'm putting competition out there, but it's not. There's enough clients to go around, and I know that Nikki and I, we market quite a bit, and we can do some things that other people can't, and I know some other hypnotists, even you, Jeff, have specialties of some things that we can't do, so we refer back and forth all the time.
Oh, absolutely right. And you're also absolutely right that there are some scary, scary hypnotists out there.
That's the best way I can put it. I don't know how another way to describe it. And it's just not hypnotists. The same thing happens in the medical profession. You have some scary doctors out there, scary dentists. You have scary psychologists. They're just there. But for some reason, hypnosis is an up-and-coming thing. It's been up-and-coming for years. But it's becoming more mainstream, and people are beginning to take a closer look at it. And so you see more of the scarier hypnotists and hypnotherapists that are out there.
That's probably true.
So, Jeff, you were talking about the SAH. How did you, now you're president, so how did you go from talking to John and becoming involved with it to becoming president?
Well, as John tells the story, and it was really something that happened with him because John was the one who had to decide where the SAH was going to go next after Mark resigned, John looked at who he knew. He looked at who was hungry enough to take the organization and run with it. He looked at people who he knew were smart enough to do what he thought was the right thing with the organization. And he looked at somebody who had some ideas about where to go next with the organization. And, in fact, I just got an email from John a little bit ago when he knew I was going to be on this program. And he related the process that he went through, and he said that my name just kept coming up in his head over and over again, and he finally decided to quit ignoring his subconscious and act, and that led him to make the phone call.
Right.
It's something that I'm very glad he did. As I said, it was something of a surprise. I have not been in the business as long as a lot of people he knew. I did not have the public exposure of a lot of people that he knew. But the split between John and Mark in certain circles was public and ugly, and I think that he was looking for somebody specifically who wasn't as well known within the hypnosis community and without as a lot of the other candidates were.
Right. Jeff, just as people are listening to this program, if they want to go on the website for the SAH, the Society of Applied Hypnosis, or contact you, how do they do that?
All right. The website is www.appliedhypnosis, that's all one word, appliedhypnosis.org, appliedhypnosis.org, and they can reach me at president@appliedhypnosis.org.
Good. Now, you had mentioned the sleepwalkers, and you also mentioned, and we're talking about the Society of Applied Hypnosis. Are they affiliated in any way?
They're not. A lot of people are confused about that, and I can understand why, because they were both founded by the same man, John Petrocelli, and I do run a sleepwalkers chapter here in Columbus. But in terms of any sort of connection officially between the two organizations, there is none. It could be said, and with a certain amount of truth, that sleepwalkers did give birth to the Society of Applied Hypnosis, but they are separate organizations. Sleepwalkers is run by a man in New Jersey by the name of Brian Balencia, and we keep separate books, separate websites, separate administrative bodies. I do know Brian. The hypnosis community, when you're talking about people who are good at what they do, we tend to find one another. Not entirely sure how that works. The internet has certainly helped that. But I do know Brian. John and I actually met Brian at the same time at a class by somebody else who is very, very good at what he does in terms of hypnosis, a man by the name of Jerry Kine down in Florida. And Brian got involved in Sleepwalkers, and very similar to what happened with me when the president of Sleepwalkers at the time, a man named David Snyder out in San Diego, decided that he no longer wished to be president of Sleepwalkers. John went through his list of who he knew, who was smart, and in the case of Brian, Brian has a business background, which brings a whole new flavor to Sleepwalkers. So we're all really excited about some of the things he's got going on for that, but both organizations are separate, although we do have somewhat overlapping goals, which is to create the best hypnotists and to raise the awareness of hypnosis as a serious modality for change.
Yeah, and those are I mean, that's the goals that everybody should be focused on, in my opinion. Now, remember, if you want to call in the U.S., it's 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. You can log on to bbsradio.com or even to our website at bill-nikki.com and drop us a line. All the information is right there. Jeff, I want to get into what the benefits are to becoming a member of the SAH as well as the training, as opposed to other certification organizations. But Nikki, of course, Nikki's my wife, but I took her through the training along with someone else that I was putting through the training also. And what did you find, Nikki, that, I guess, what's the structure of the SAH training? How would you explain it? And what did you like about it? And give me your opinion on that.
Well, the structure is, it's very, I don't know if results-oriented is exactly how I want to phrase it, but it's, like you said earlier, it's all about not only receiving the knowledge, but using the knowledge. And even myself being fairly new, you know, to the hypnosis industry and being just recently certified and, you know, just now, you know, finding my voice, so to speak, in hypnosis, I'm amazed by some of the people, like you said, who have come to us, who have used other trainings, who have been practicing for, in some cases, several years, who don't know half as much as what I do, and I've only been doing it for, you know, just over a year. So I think it's very important that hypnosis is something that you can't read it in a book and grasp entirely what it is. You have to do it, participate in it, and fully entrench yourself in what it is, what it means, you know, the submodalities of it. You have to be in it to fully appreciate what it does. And I don't think that a lot of the trainings out there understand that, maybe. but they definitely don't address that.
No, they don't at all. And it is hard to... When you learn hypnosis, you're not learning anything new, is
right.
How I explain to people, because it's not like you go to a math class and you learn new formulas and you memorize new things, and then you go and regurgitate it on a test, and you've learned something new. You get graded on it. Hypnosis is something that you do naturally. Everybody does it. It's how do you do it on purpose, and how do you induce it in other people and show them how to do it on purpose. And so it's kind of honing your communication skills and knowing what to look for.
Right.
And it's recognizing what a trance looks like and recognizing if a person is making those changes. And if you're doing it, if you're going to a training that's simply a lecture with very few exercises in it, or if you're learning online, you don't learn that. And
right.
I think that's one of the most important things about being a hypnotist and learning how to do it.
And, Jeff, I think another thing, too, that is very important to point out about the SAH and the way that their training is facilitated is that it is, like Bill was saying earlier, it's important to not only gain the knowledge of hypnosis, but what do you do with it once you have it? And I think the SAH does a very good job of initiating that knowledge, instilling that knowledge into individuals. You know, what do you do with it once you have it, and how do you recognize the different states and you know, when people are in a trance, and you know, there are all kinds of different things that can happen in a trance and different things that you need to watch for. So I think that's an important thing too, is that they do train you and work with you on, you know, how to progress past just hypnosis.
And Jeff, what can you add to that about the benefits of being a member? I know you probably have a whole list, so take as long as you need.
Well, you're absolutely right. The key benefit of being a member of the SAH is how you get there, and that's by taking a class taught by an SAH-certified trainer. There are other organizations out there that offer reciprocal certifications with other organizations.
And I hear you say that, Jeff, but I hear you say the phrase, we will never certify a cat. Can you explain that to people?
I love that story.
Yeah. Well, that's actually exactly where I was going. It's like you're reading my mind, Bill. There was a story online. I don't know the URL for it, but I'm sure that if someone were to Google hypnosis certify and cat, they could probably find it. There was a fella who got his cat certified by a hypnosis certification organization who basically didn't check anything, just wanted him to fill out a piece of paper and make sure his check cleared. And
Apparently
this guy was using his cat's name to fill out certain things like warranty cards and things of that nature, so that when he got junk mail, anything that was addressed to the cat was junk mail and he could just toss it. Well, the cat got a credit card application, and he acted as co-signer for the cat, and so the cat had plastic, and the cat was able to pay for hypnosis certification. And by getting this one, he was then able to, in essence, trade up to go to successively more respected hypnosis certification organizations and said, I've been certified by the XYZ organization. If, you know, I want to be certified by you, if I pay you the money, will you give me a reciprocal certification? And there are a lot of organizations out there who will say, sure. And it was sort of embarrassing. I won't say which one, except to say that it was not the Society of Applied Hypnosis, but one of the organizations which I am certified through certified this cat. And that was embarrassing to everybody involved. It's an organization that certainly took itself fairly seriously, but they didn't see the pitfalls in what they were doing by allowing reciprocal certification. The SAH only certifies people who have attended an SAH-approved training or have successfully met a one-on-one skills challenge with an SAH-certified trainer, which is to say that if you've had a lot of experience in the field, you've been to some trainings, if you think you already have the stuff to be a member of the SAH, you can contact a trainer and have a sit-down, and it might take a couple of hours, it might take a few minutes, depending on how quickly the trainer is able to make his decision about your skills and what you have going on in terms of how you view hypnosis. But that is another way to be certified. So what that means is that you're getting, if you attend a class, real-world, hands-on, practical training. One of the things that makes the SAH a little different from everybody else is, not everybody else, there are one or two organizations who do this also. We do not have a set curriculum. We expect our certified trainers to be able to put together a class themselves based around a certain set of outcome requirements. In other words, our trainers have a list. Your students have to be able to do these types of things. They have to be able to get these types of results. How you teach them to get that result is your business. And if you're thinking about being an SAH trainer, you need to have enough background to be able to put together a class like that. So right away, you know that if you're taking an SAH certified class, you're dealing with a trainer who has experience, creativity, and also has quite a bit of training ability, which is something that a lot of organizations completely overlook.
Oh, absolutely, they do.
Now, of the
when someone goes through the when someone becomes certified, to build on the answer that you just gave, how does someone become certified, and does everybody that goes through a class become certified?
Well, someone becomes certified by successfully completing the class or by successfully meeting one of those one-on-one challenges that I spoke of earlier. Not everybody who attends the class will necessarily be certified. Just because your check clears, just because your credit card came back approved, does not mean that at the end of the class you're going to be certified.
And that's different from many of the other organizations out there, right?
Oh, it really is. A lot of places, in fact, with some organizations that I still hold in high regard, basically you just have to show up every day and make sure you're there on the last day to get your piece of paper.
Right.
But with the SAH, you actually have to do the exercises in class. The instructor is going around not only helping people get the exercises down, but checking to see how you're doing. And you know, at the end of the week, or it usually doesn't take that long, you'll probably get some coaching from the instructor along the way if he thinks that you've got an issue, if you've got something going on that might potentially keep you from being certified. The instructor will certainly say something to you. But at the end of the week, if nothing took, if for whatever reason you don't have what it takes, you will not be certified. Now, one of the differences between how the SAH was run when Mark was involved and the way it's run now is that all of our instructors are certainly incredibly highly encouraged to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Right.
Mark's philosophy was, I'm going at my speed and I'll help you, but if you can't keep up, then that's just, you know, too bad, you shouldn't have been here. That was a poor decision on your part. All of our trainers now have instruction to work with those students. I mean, there might just be somebody there who simply for whatever reason is totally in over his head at the time.
Yeah.
Then, you know, separate arrangements can be made in a situation like that. But by and large, the instructor has the job of making sure that everybody keeps up.
Now, trainers in the Society of Applied Hypnosis are held accountable for their students.
That's true.
That too.
We track who is trained by whom. And if we start getting complaints about students, certified hypnotists at that point, we'll go back and we'll find who trained them. And there will be a very serious and potentially unpleasant conversation happening at that point between myself and the instructor about, you know, now, I mean, if the student is doing stupid stuff that really doesn't have anything to do with hypnosis, I'm not going to put that on the trainer. That's not his fault. But if the student is just practicing bad hypnosis, if the student is unskilled, if the student is choosing to use techniques that are not really appropriate, and I certainly run into that with hypnotists from other organizations, then there will be that unpleasant conversation. It'll be unpleasant for them, and it'll be unpleasant for me because I expect the best from the trainers of this organization, and so far that's what I've seen.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with, well, not only with the trainers, I know a lot of them, and I mean, including myself, so I'm kind of bragging about myself, but the trainers really do know what they're talking about, and it's not anything you get off the internet, it's not a lecture, it's very interactive, and I know when I train, I make sure that the people I'm training, they know what they're doing. It's the same way in my private practice. If I work with someone, I want results, and I want them to be amazing, because that's the people that send referrals back to me. And the same thing with the training. I don't want to be linked up with somebody who just does not get the job done or does not get the results that they should be getting. And so I make sure that everybody is up to par when it comes to the people that I put through the training and sign off on. Also, Jeff, you mentioned something about you leave it up to the instructors to – you give them a framework, and you leave it up to the instructors to put their training together based around that framework and some core competencies. And I like that idea, and I've always worked with people in the same way when it comes to training on hypnosis. And even inside of my training, anybody can go out and they can read scripts. And that's not a bad way to learn. And, you know, I go back to scripts even because there's some scripts that work very well. And a script, for those listeners who don't know what it is, it's just a written out hypnotic induction. It could be for weight loss, stop smoking, fears, whatever it is. And you read it word for word, or you can kind of ad lib here and there, but it's that's a script, just like you were reading a movie script. But what I like to teach the students in my classes is I give them a framework. Okay, what are the steps that we'd like to take people through, and take some of the skills that you've learned, you know, over the course of the last few days, and take people through those steps. So I would like to, preferably instead of going through a script, give them a framework to work with, to work within, and let them put their own personality inside of it.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And because our instructors do have the flexibility to use their own experience and their own learnings to structure their class, we get a lot of interesting things going on. You, for example, have a strong background in NLP, as do I. John has a strong background in Silva. In fact, we have an instructor out in California who is doing something, to the best of my knowledge, unique within the SAH for the time being. He is offering a combined NLP practitioner and SAH hypnosis certification course. Now, there are other NLP trainers who, at the end of the course, if you pay the $85 or whatever the organization requires, you can also get certified in hypnosis through another organization.
Right.
But that's mostly because that particular organization has really low standards about what they require out of their hypnotist.
Yeah, they just want the check, and they want it to clear. That's what it boils down to. So
now, that also makes them a huge organization.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. You get a lot of members that way. When it comes to the trainers, how do you become a certified trainer? How do you know when somebody's good enough to become a trainer for the Society of Applied Hypnosis?
There are two tracks to becoming a trainer, very similar to the two tracks to becoming a member. If you have been an SAH certified hypnotist for a period of time, and you have an interest in being a trainer, you can contact me, and depending on how well, I'm sorry.
Time to plug yourself. How can they get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me through the website, www.appliedhypnosis.org, or they could email me at president@appliedhypnosis.org.
Okay.
we don't take anybody as a trainer who isn't already certified as an SAH hypnotist. That's, again, because we're not interested in generating income to the detriment of the organization's reputation. You know, we certainly like income. It helps us do a lot of things. We have some things in the works that are going to require certain expenditures. We've got an annual meeting coming up within the next 18 months. Yes, my dog is very pleased about the annual meeting.
Is he certified in hypnosis?
No, he's not. He is a certified therapy dog, however. The other way is through taking a train-the-trainer program. Now, before Mark left the SAH, he had a train-the-trainer program for his new curriculum. And people who were graduates of that back when the new curriculum was part of the SAH program were eligible to become SAH trainers.
Okay.
We also are looking at having a new train-the-trainer program coming up again within the next 18 months, possibly, although not necessarily, in conjunction with that annual meeting, which I spoke earlier. And you can also do a one-on-one application. It doesn't hurt to have had trainer training or practical real-world front-of-the-room training and speaking experience before you do that, though. In fact, it helps a lot.
Yes. It does help a lot, and I run into hypnotists a lot, and Jeff, I'm sure you do too, that they're a hypnotist, and one of the things that we work with as hypnotherapists is our fears for public speaking, and public speaking is a big one because Americans, people in general, would rather die than speak in public, and I think it's amusing to me because I pick up a lot of life coaches as clients, and I pick up some other hypnotists as clients. And they either can't motivate themselves to make cold calls so they can bring the business in, or they can't speak in public so they can't give any public talks to kind of build their business. And I'm sitting there thinking in my mind that you're a coach and you're helping other people, but you can't do it yourself. And when you look at an instructor, do you look for people who walk their talk, I guess, is the best way to put it?
I absolutely do. The thing that I look at most strongly, and you know, there are some really amazing hypnotists and change work people out there who are not very good at working on themselves, but they're very, very good at teaching others. There is a fellow whose name I won't mention who is well known in the influence and persuasion community in terms of sales mostly, but not exclusively, who is really, really fat. I don't know a kind way to say it. The man's fat. He's a big man, and either he's completely okay with that, and there's nothing wrong with being overweight unless you don't want to be overweight, or he's not able to make these changes to himself, but he's really good at helping other people learn how to help people make those changes.
Yeah.
And there's more to being a good trainer than having skills in the field, although that's a big part of it. One of the things that we do have going for us as a young organization is that all of our trainers are working hypnotists. This is very unusual.
Yes, it is. I mean, I feel that's the only way to really stay on top of the new and upcoming thing, and it's also the only way to keep your skills honed, because if you're teaching all the time, you also need some practical practice yourself, and that's a good way to get it.
Sure. How else are you going to update your classes, keep them modern, keep them relevant, if you're not there working with clients on, I don't want to say day-to-day, but certainly on a regular basis? There are plenty of instructors out there who haven't seen a client in 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And although their classes might be really good, I can't help wonder how much better they'd be if they put in some office hours.
Right. Absolutely. Now, I know there's trainers in all kinds of locations across the United States, and you have trainers that are out of the United States. Is that right?
At this particular time, I believe that we have one who is in Scandinavia.
So if there's not a training near where the for our listeners, if there's not a training near where they live, what can people do?
This is something that we've only started doing in the past year, and it's been really well received. A number of our trainers have agreed to accept sponsored training contracts. And the way this works is pretty simple. It varies from trainer to trainer. Each trainer is going to have his own requirements. But the way it works basically is this. Let's say that you live in, well, for example, I know for a fact that we don't have an NLP, we don't have an SAH trainer in North Dakota. So let's say you live in Bismarck, North Dakota, just as an example, and you want to attend an SAH training, and there are no trainers in North Dakota. The closest one to North Dakota, I think, is here in Columbus, which is a haul from North Dakota.
Yes.
So you're thinking, what do I do? Well, you go to the website, which again is www.appliedhypnosis.org, and you go to the trainer page, and you check out and see who's available there. But down at the bottom of that page, there is an email link where you can send off an email, and that will then be broadcast to the trainers who have agreed to take on sponsored trainings, and you'll be contacted by however many trainings decide that they want to take on a class in Bismarck, and you'll then have to strike up an agreement with that trainer to put on a training in your town, which is a pretty neat deal, given that in any field, really, there are trainers of a certain caliber who only train where they feel like training.
Right.
You know, there are trainers who will go to various different places in California because they know they can fill a class in California pretty easily. It's a huge state, and the interest in hypnosis is pretty high there compared to other places. But as the sponsor for this training, you in Bismarck now have the responsibility of promoting this training and filling the class. The trainer will also probably, again, this varies from trainer to trainer, require a daily per diem, a set amount per day over and above his or her expenses for getting to and staying in your town. After those expenses, after those expenses are covered, after your promotional expenses are covered, after your cost of renting the room for the training is covered, whatever is left over would be considered profit, and you would split that. The standard split is 50-50, but each trainer has their own particular ideas of what are the minimum requirements they'll work for. Plus, you get your training free.
That's a big benefit for a lot of people.
It really is, because not only do you save however much money that particular trainer charges, and I should point out that at one point that was going to be a set fixed price. And that was back when everybody was going to be teaching the same class. Now that the trainers are developing their own class, trainers are charging what they need to charge in their particular market. Here in Columbus, I don't need to charge as much as John in New York does because I can get a training room for a lot less than John can.
Yeah.
Just because hotel conference rooms here in Columbus go anywhere from $50 to $250, depending on the quality of the hotel. Out in New York, it might cost John $500 to $1,000 a day.
That's right. Hey, Jeff, so, we've got about a minute left, and we're going to wrap this up. You want to tell people how they can get a hold of you and the Society of Applied Hypnosis, and we'll kind of sign off with that.
Fantastic. You can get in touch with me via email at president@appliedhypnosis.org. That's all one word, appliedhypnosis.org. The website is www.appliedhypnosis.org, and you can send an email directly to me if you're interested in sponsoring a training where you live.
That's good. And you can always get a hold of Nikki and I by going to www.bill-nikki, that's N-I-K-K-I.com, and it's B-I-L-L for those of you that don't know how to spell Bill, but it's bill-nikki.com, and next week's program, I have no idea what we're talking about next week, do you, Nikki?
No.
So we'll make it up as we go, but we'll plan them next week, and again, the sponsor for today is the Society of Applied Hypnosis, and you're also the sponsor for next week and the week after, too, so I want to thank Jeff for being a guest on the show. And that will be it for Hypnotize with Bill and Nikki today. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Nikki. Thanks, Bill.